Hello, it's RTE, your politics podcast again. I'm Áine Lawler. With me, Fiacra O'Kiani, Joe McGraelig and Paul Cunningham from RTE's politics team here at Leinster House. And the race for the Oras is the main talking point of the week, Paul. We have a date, October the 24th, so we know the date for the election now. Set the scene for us as we head into the weekend.
We've had a slow burner in which we haven't had many candidates in the field, but now suddenly there's a momentum and we're beginning to see things happen. Catherine Connolly, the independent candidate, out there on her own. Now we know that we're going to have Heather Humphreys of Fine Gael, although we have to wait until Saturday week for that to be officially confirmed and her campaign launched. We also know that Fianna Fáil is going to decide its candidate next Tuesday. And it's pretty clear that Jim Gavin, the former Dublin GA manager, football manager, is in the front seat there. We've got Sinn Féin. They're the ones who are dilly-dallying a bit, sticking to the possibility that they're going to make an announcement on September 20th. But it's open to the party to bring that back, maybe to ensure that they can go to the ploughing or something like that. There it seems as if Sinn Féin are tilting away from standing behind Catherine Connolly, more likely to put forward a candidate themselves, and sort of the chatter around Leinster House is it's more likely to be Piers Doherty than Mary Lou McDonald. So that's one of the flexes. And then outside of Leinster House, out in the local authority areas, you've got a whole lot of local authorities who are waiting to hear from all sorts of hopefuls who will hope they will be able to garner the support of four local authorities and therefore be able to get on the ballot paper. But it's clear 24th of September, it's only 3 weeks now. All of that business has to be done. Then the field will be set and then it's going to be a four-week rampage.
Joe, I was talking to a young colleague this morning who hasn't been to the ploughing before and who'll be going for the day when all the politicians will arrive. And
it's going to be another world.
Exactly, going round the political tents, seeing which politicians have well-worn dirty wellies and which ones haven't. And it is just in terms of sheer political compressed campaigning, pressing the flesh. It is an event, isn't it, in the Irish political calendar, especially when there's a presidential.
And there may not be a Sinn Féin candidate on the ground there, which would be quite remarkable, really. Yeah, no, the ploughing, first of all, it attracts 270,000 people every year. So that is a huge constituency to be able to access them in a very short space of time. And every year, it's all of the political parties will have their tents there anyway. They'll always be down there. You'll have Taoiseach, Tánaiste, every minister, all of the opposition leaders, they've all been there. I haven't seen you there, Paul, actually. Were you there last
year? No, I've always wanted to go down to the planning
office. So you don't have dirty wellies. You have never worn dirty wellies.
And now they want, obviously, I'd have to buy wellies. And therefore, Joe is definitely not going to let me go down.
I'll lend you some wellies for my time in agriculture so you can take them. But anyway, it is a massive opportunity to meet a whole broad range of people, mainly from rural Ireland, but an awful lot of people from urban Ireland as well. And obviously, all of the candidates will be going down there, those that are in the field. Whether Sinn Féin has the candidate, we heard earlier on that Ivana Bacic was accusing Sinn Féin of dithering over all of this. And maybe that will sting, maybe it won't sting. I suppose they'll make up their own mind in due course. They've said that the consultation is ongoing with the members right around the country. And that's all 32 counties. And then there will be an Ard Cóirlí meeting due to take place on the 20th. Of September, and that is ultimately where we'll get the decision. Now, could they go earlier? Could they decide? I mean, obviously, in one way, it's a great advantage. They can see what the entire field is before they decide themselves. But on the other side of it, though, you'd have to think if it's a 32-county party that's ambitious to lead the government here and all the rest of it, you would imagine they'd want to be in the field. They want to be pushing their candidate from a much earlier stage.
I remember Martin McGuinness actually at the ploughing in 2011. But anyhow, that wasn't today nor yesterday, and we've come on since. Let's talk, Fiacra, about Fianna Fáil. So the contest between Jim Gavin and Billy Kelleher. Billy Kelleher apparently has enough votes to for a serious challenge. The question's going to be the size of that challenge. It's expected Jim Gavin will win at the moment. But then the question is, does he have the people skills on the campaign trail to turn that Fianna Fáil nomination, if he gets it, into a victory? And what does that mean then for Micheál Martin? Would that be a fair summation?
That'd be a very fair summation, Áine. And there's really 2 points to this. Firstly, in terms of the practical numbers. So Jim Gavin appears to have the support of 30 people, at least formally does at the moment. Billy Kelleher has five, including Billy. at the moment, who have publicly said they will back him. Now, obviously, that's going to change to 71 votes and all, but it does appear to be leaning towards Jim Gavin at the moment. That's what Micheál Martin will want. The candidates, the closing date for when candidates can be nominated is tomorrow, and then they will make a decision. They'll have that vote on Tuesday. Yeah, Friday and then Tuesday. So that's the practical side of it. Now, in terms of if Jim Gavin does get the nomination, the question over him is firstly, as you said, his people skills. Is he going to be able to deal with the rough and tumble of political discourse? Because it's a very different type of interview when you're talking about the GAA, a successful GAA team that, you know, a large part of the country, or at least some of the country, has a lot of support for, and then going into details about your personal views on matters and what you would do in terms of the presidency. Now, there is a view in Fianna Fáil that maybe Billy Kelleher would be better at that, but certainly Micheál Martin has indicated very clearly that he believes Jim Gavin is the person that they want to put forward. Now, the question really, the last part of this, is in terms of presuming Jim Gavin does get the nomination for Fianna Fáil, Micheál Martin would certainly, and his supporters would certainly, want that to be a significant enough victory, because if it's only a victory by single digits, then it does potentially pose a bit of a question about quite a lot of the parliamentary party of Fianna Fáil didn't go with Micheál.
And their satisfaction with the way the party is being run at the moment.
Yeah, because there is maybe a perception in Fianna Fáil, and this is something that's been around, you know, for most of Micheál Martin's tenure, that sometimes Micheál Martin's style is to kind of impose a position on this. So this is the conclusion that he wants, and he's the leader, and this is the way it goes. Micheál Martin would suggest otherwise, that look, he is the leader, but he does want to hear people's views. So there is a sort of undercurrent in the parliamentary party in Fianna Fáil that maybe Billy Kelleher will benefit from some partial renegade votes on this, but is he going to have enough to get past Jim Gavin will be tricky.
The fact that it's a secret ballot at the end of the day, so whatever people might say publicly and how they vote in the end could be completely different. And I think that Billy Kelleher and certainly senior people that I was talking in Fianna Fáil have said to me that it's by no means a foregone conclusion, and that anything could happen. It very much is in play. On the face of it, I suppose Jim Gavin has got a lot of public support, but you know, that ballot, when it comes next Tuesday at the parliamentary party meeting, it could be a surprise.
And he's getting some interesting endorsements as well as that from other public figures. But it's not just about debates, Paul, is it? It's also about whether you've got that people factor. It's also about whether, you know, on a tired day, you know, a rainy, cold night, just like Simon Harris and Count Turk, something happens in front of camera and it's just gone from you then.
Yeah, an awful lot of it relates to something intangible called feelings. What feeling are you able to invoke as a candidate reaching out to the population, that they feel something in you, maybe a pride, that you're going to be able to represent them? If you're going to be, you know, if something happens like, you know, 9/11 and we remember our president, or Michael D. Higgins coming out on COVID, that person, the father or mother of the nation, who's able to make you feel. And I think that's something that these candidates have to project. And because it's intangible, it's hard.
The vision thing, isn't that what Bill Clinton used to call it?
And I suppose one thing about Jim is that we don't know. Is we don't know very much about him. As, you know, Fiacre was just talking about, you know, strategist, logical, achiever, goals. That's one thing. But when you actually have to empathise, that's something else. So that will clearly be something he knows about. He clearly has to go out into it. But one last thing is that if I remember when my mum was making soup and she wanted to do it quickly, she put it into the pressure cooker, that big old one with the sort of little metal top. And that's what happens to
death candidates. Traps those things.
They put into, so Jim Gavin's going to be put into that pressure cooker like he's never been before, and the heat goes up high and he either survives or he goes splat.
And there is a sort of, this came up on this week, just in the past 24 hours, there were five or six Fianna Fáil TDs who came out in support of Jim Gavin. And most of that doorstep for about 20 minutes was a number of reporters, and Paul and myself were there, including a couple of others from RTE, saying, OK, well, we're hearing why you want to support him, but we're not hearing from Jim Gavin. We don't know what Jim Gavin stands for. And when we ask you guys, why are you supporting him? It seems to be, you know, to get to volunteerism, to get to, you know, his track record. But the vision thing, as you said, is not, it's not being expressed so far.
Now, mind you, people, anybody that knows him and have worked for him seem to speak very, very highly of him. But I suppose the difference will be that in the past, all of his interactions, certainly with the public and certainly with the media, he was in control of those because he was the boss. He was the six-time All-Ireland manager. He was, you know, in those roles that he had. And that control will be lost in the campaign. So that's where the difference might be.
Someone who has displayed a track record of people skills, although also has a track record that is causing some controversy, for instance, in the area of disability, is Heather Humphreys. So she's now the official Fine Gael candidate, Paul. Tom Clonan, of course, having a very different recollection to a meeting about proposed changes to disability entitlements and whether people would have to be assessed and so on, which was finally dropped after the care referendum by the previous government. So how do you think her first couple of days are going?
Well, the first question she has to answer is why? Because she said she was gone, she was to a degree burnt out, she wanted to spend more time with the grandkids. Absolutely, that would be understandable. Mm-hmm. But now you're coming back in again. So there's a question of just exactly why are you doing it and do you have the chutzpah to get through it? The second thing then, obviously with the politician, is you're judged by your record, you're judged by your decisions. And she is therefore, from an opposition point of view, going to get nailed to her party's record. Heather Humphreys, disabilities. Heather Humphreys, unemployment. Heather Humphreys, housing. And that is going to be the key thing for her, is to be able to, on the one hand, defend what she did. But we all know that none of the parties in the segmented world we live in can be elected on their own. So they have to reach beyond their party. And so that's the to-ing and fro-ing. Mm. Opposition trying to just keep her into that Fine Gael box. She trying to reach beyond. And she does have a very interesting personal story. She is someone who can do well with the media. Although you saw in some of the referenda happening, the last ones, that wasn't always her forte. So she's something of, we know her, but we don't know her in the way this battle is, because the presidency is unique. In the first couple of days, I think she did well, but, you know, long way to go.
Yeah, I would say she'd be a woman who'd know how to walk around the ploughing, though, Joe.
Oh, she certainly would. I mean, you know, in the ministries that she's had, she's toured up and down the country. She's had the good fortune to be able to give grants to every single, local, well, many local groups all around the country when she was in the Department of Rural Affairs. She is well known and she has, you know, an acknowledged friendliness about her, which many, many people will reference when they're talking about her. But it is going to be a big challenge for her, you know, and it is, she's going into a campaign like none other in this presidential campaign. Obviously, she's going to have to perform very well. Yeah. And as Paul says, she's going to have to be able to defend those things in her past which have come up, and to defend government policy, which is, you know, going to be a challenge.
Hey, one good thing, sorry for interrupting on you, one good thing for her is that some of the independent rural TDs have come out saying she's great. And I think that does give her some sort of hope that she can reach
The Healy Rays, and I'll be moving on to Labour next, but it'll also be interesting to see, because, again, the Healy Rays involved in nominating independent candidates before having backed Heather Humphreys. Does that rule them out as a potential source of nominations for other would-be independents? But we'll come to that in a moment. Fiacra, Heather Humphreys, and the battle she's going to have ahead of her. And again, we were talking about it with Jim Gavin. The vision thing. I mean, people would talk about her being practical, being likeable, being a safe pair of hands. Vision, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is the conundrum for Heather Humphreys. As you guys were saying there, like, you know, she's well known, certainly in political circles, being approachable and likeable. She does maybe have the rural support, you would imagine, in terms of her background. I think the vision approach that maybe Fine Gael is approaching on this is that, firstly, she can maybe, hopefully from their perspective, step outside the party-specific limitation. But secondly,
and that depends on how much this campaign becomes a referendum on Simon Harris and how to the forefront he's going to be in her campaign.
Exactly, and will Simon Harris be of benefit or be of hindrance to her? Because I think Simon Harris's stock maybe among some people has maybe reduced in certainly the past 12 months or so. But the second thing really for Heather Humphreys, and the thing I think the Fine Gael will maybe lean into, particularly if Sinn Féin do put forward a candidate or do support a candidate in a strong way, is the fact that she's a border candidate. The fact that she, you know, can speak from that part of the population.
And Presbyterian.
And
yes.
Presbyterian as well. So, you know, a president for all of Ireland potentially. That's certainly something that if things get a bit sticky, if he's maybe leaning into.
Yes, and she certainly was in her interview with Justin McCarthy on the News at One yesterday. Paul, on Morning Ireland today, Labour Party leader Ivana Bacik was talking to me about the strength of her support for Catherine Connolly, despite the controversy there has been over remarks she's made in various interviews when questioned on issues like her trip to Syria and her attitude to the Labour Party.
Yeah, Catherine Connolly used to be in the Labour Party and then she left the Labour Party and really hasn't had a good word to say about the Labour Party ever since, until such a time as she was seeking their support for her campaign. I think it's a sticky thing for Ivana Bacic. She is the leader. She was the one who said we needed to have a cross-left alliance. Catherine Connolly is a candidate and we are going to hitch our star to that campaign. Within the party, it's a minority, but number one, you shouldn't back Catherine Connolly because she didn't do anything for us. And two, if Labour was going to try and come up with a presidential plan, we should be leading it, not following in behind of the Sock Dems. But in her interview with you this morning on Morning Ireland, Ivana Bacic was talking about how excited the Labour Party was. When I'm talking to people here in Leinster House, it seems that the older brigade, less excited, younger brigade, a little bit more excited. But Catherine Connolly herself isn't just limited to Labour. She's got the Social Democrats. She's got the People Before Profit. This week, Ruth Coppinger of Solidarity also rolled in saying that Catherine Connolly had the clearest view on Gaza and she was going to back her in that regard. And she also has some independence. So Catherine Connolly has been the longest in the field. She's got sort of an awful lot of left party supporting her, although Sinn Féin clearly are holding their judgment just yet. I think for her, it's been a bruising campaign already.
And she's saying the media is framing its questions against her.
But if you listen to Justin McCarthy's interview with Heather Humphreys, it's the same thing. You go back over someone's record and you ask, well, what about this? Was that a mistake? What about that? Shouldn't you have done more? So I think that's something one should expect. And to my mind, is that when you go in front of an interview, rather than saying, I don't like this question and when can I get on to talk about my thing, you just answer it, you answer it directly. And you should have an answer that is clear, short, concise, and you're just able to bat it out. There should not be, at this stage of the campaign, you're still thinking about what you're supposed to be saying. That just does not make sense to me.
And on that pitch of being the United Left candidate, and as you're saying, some dissent in Labour, but a majority went for her. But the fact that Sinn Féin haven't backed her, could that still happen? And what difference would that make? How much of an outside chance is that?
Well, Catherine Connolly, in her towards the beginning of her campaign, was talking about her desire to have United Ireland. And it was viewed by the media as this was just a wave to Sinn Féin, that she too could blend their message as well with the sort of the more centre-left outlook. She was up in Belfast recently, and there wasn't a strong Sinn Féin support out for her. And that was one of the reasons why people feel that Sinn Féin is just beginning to withdraw from that idea of a joint left alliance, and that Sinn Féin wants to have a standard bearer for its message, the 32 county republic. That's its message, and it's going to defend it, and it's going to have someone strong in the field to do just that. While initially we were talking, would Mary Lou McDonald be that person, after she changed her mind from earlier this year? Focus seems to be heading towards Piers Doherty of Donegal, that he could be the person, that they need to put someone substantial in, and he could be that man.
Although, was Mary Lou trolling us? What, didn't she put up a picture on social media on Sunday of herself having a nice stroll through the Phoenix Park?
As if a politician would ever decide to troll or to test the waters or test the temperatures of anything. I think there might be an element of that going on. I mean, certainly if you were a Sinn Féin strategist, you'd be looking at this and saying, OK, well, they say they have a couple of weeks still to decide. They're going to decide, basically be the last in the field. That's potentially a hindrance in terms of, you know, people saying, well, you're dilly-dallying, as Ivana Bacic said this morning. But it's certainly, they might see it as a benefit because they can actually look at the whole field. I think they haven't quite decided what they're going to do yet. They could decide to run Mary Lou McDonald. They could decide to run somebody like Piers Doherty. That rumour certainly is going around the past few days. Or they could decide to lean into Catherine Connolly. But I think that's probably changing week by week. And they probably have three options, three envelopes of options. Yeah. And they're going to make a decision probably as late as possible just to see exactly what way things are going at this stage.
The way it's looking at the moment, it's likely there's three candidates, possibly four candidates. Yeah. There may not be a fifth candidate. You know, if none of the independents can get a nomination through either the Oireachtas route or through the local authority route, and it's looking quite unlikely there.
I'll talk about them in a minute, but just sticking with Sinn Féin for a second. Because I
disagree with my colleague to my right here. I think they know exactly what they're going to do. I think they have it mapped out a long time ago, and walks in the park and all that type of stuff. They're watching it and watching it pass by, and when they believe the time is optimum, they're going to tell us what it is.
And maybe maybe, and they have been shipping a lot of criticism this summer for allowing the uncertainty to continue, for allowing Mary Lou's name to be floating around there. But given that they got so badly burned in previous presidential elections, both Martin McGuinness and Leonie Riada, maybe in hindsight, and this, you know, it's a long way to go to the 24th of October, maybe in hindsight, waiting to see what happens to the field, waiting to see how it settles down, will play in their favour. What would success be for Sinn Féin?
Well, winning.
Bar winning. What would success be?
Well, the financial officers are going to say is getting your money back that you get enough. That's something that Leonie Riada wasn't able to do. And that's why I think they have to put in a real campaign. But I think they want to hold on to that message. What is the key defining thing that Sinn Féin have? It is the 32 County Republic.
Yes. Yeah,
if it was the case that they did decide that Mary Lou McDonald has put in, you know, a shift, it's unlikely, this is their thinking, I'm imagining, that, you know, another 5 years, who knows, it's too far out for her. This is the moment. Mm-hmm. She is road tested. She's a brilliant campaigner. She is being torched by the media. There's no surprises there. And that she could go out and make that and become, I mean, that would be a substantial victory for the party. And
she's their best chance of winning it.
Yes,
think.
Absolutely.
And she is personable as well, something that never comes across, obviously, in the Dáil performances. But when you see her out on election campaigns, you can see that she has great interaction with the public.
She's been
too.
A huge bonus so to Sinn Féin, particularly,
indeed,
for instance, in the last campaign, which they went into, you know, not in such great shape and emerging relatively well.
But is that the question? One of the questions is when people are chatting about it, saying she won't do it. And the reason she won't do it is that her reputation will have taken such a knock that she'd be left with no other option than to resign as party leader on the basis of that.
Well, you could look at that another way as well.
Necessarily, that has to be the case.
You could look the other way as well. I mean, if she stood, first of all, she's looking at another 4.5 years of opposition doing what she's done for the last two Dáil terms to maybe become Taoiseach, and she hasn't been successful twice before. So if she did stand here, you would say she would have to have a reasonable chance of success. And what is to stop her if she has a creditable performance from resuming her role as leader of Sinn Féin in the Dáil?
Except
there isn't
the other
actually
thing,
anything.
When Mary Lou McDonald stands up in the Dáil, she owns that Dáil chamber.
She has
the capacity to
and
get
she has
under Micheál Martin's
two terms.
Skin.
Yes,
yes.
She
and
has.
That's not fading and that's not getting tired. And I'm not sure Sinn Féin have anyone who could quite have that impact, even Piers Doherty, on the floor of the Dáil. And that's very important
to
Sinn Féin and the
jockeying
amongst the opposition.
She's formidable.
I think, Anya, though, to go back to the question you asked, Paul, a couple of minutes ago in terms of what's winning for Sinn Féin, this is a very different scenario to more than a decade ago with Martin McGuinness. Back then, winning for Sinn Féin was having a credible candidate in the fields. But now, winning for Sinn Féin is probably winning or getting as close to it as you can, because they need to copper fast. They need to highlight the fact that they're the alternative government, alternative voice, or they need to get the presidency.
They need to be, I mean, even if they don't win, they would need to, their candidate would need to be close to their
20%
vote.
Yeah, as close
vote.
As possible,
And, you know, it was pretty dismal in
it was pretty dismal year, last time around,
Let's talk about the others. Let's start with Maria Steen, who has got the backing of Aontú now. Isn't that right? And Carol Nolan?
That's right, yeah. And Pádraig Tobin was talking on Radio na Gaeltacht this morning, and he said that they have written to 23 Oireachtas members seeking support for her, although he also admitted that she's only likely to get 8. So while she's in the field, it looks very difficult, and it's hard to see how she's going to get that nomination through that route. However, Kerry County Council are having the first of the councils having their meetings next week, and her name is on the list of people who has been accepted to make a presentation to the councillors as part of that process, as Kerry County councillors make their decision on whether or not they'll back somebody. Now, she is one of, I think it's 16 that are on the list to date. Three of them we know, the other 13, 14, my maths is never very good, the other 13 you wouldn't have heard of before. Well, you may have seen them standing in local elections or in the general election, but they're not names that we would be easily recognisable.
It's worth saying that, you know, she is someone from the Island Institute. She is more of that conservative voice. She is a barrister. I think she's also got a degree in architecture. She would have been the forefront of the sort of
some of the big referenda social issues that we've had in relation to reproductive rights and everything else. So she
so there'd be some senators as well who'd be backing.
Exactly. Yeah. So that is her standard, and that will be the message that she'll bring to those councils.
Just actually on the councils, because before we talk about the other candidates, how actually open are the councils this time around? I mean, it was very different in 2016. It was very different in 2018. You know, the majorities that the big parties, the dominance of the big parties wasn't there. And also they didn't have their own candidates in the field. So, I mean, is this just a bit of theatre, or could this really make a difference?
But I suppose the point is that under the Constitution, the local authority has the right. So it's entitlement. That group of councillors can do it if they should so choose.
There are a few powers that they have. So yes, then that's one of them.
And I think anyone going into that council will be saying, who cares what your leader thinks? You have this power. Why would you want Micheál Martin, Simon Harris, Mary Lou MacDonald, whoever it may be, to tell you what you can do
when
it's there in black
and
white?
And it will only take four of them.
Four.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little bit of theatre in one sense, certainly for the local councillors. They have an opportunity to have a national profile for at least 24 hours at least. But then as well, it is quite serious as well, as Paul was saying. In terms of the route in there, like just in the door in the first place, I think Kerry County Council, which will be on Monday, you only need a nomination from one councillor. Some of the other councillors are saying we need to be four or five, because you can't have everyone in the country deciding to come in. But once you're in the door, you'll have your opportunity for a pitch. And look, county councillors, they're the most local of local politicians. They'll do what's in their best interest. I can't see every local councillor doing exactly what the party leader says.
And two would-be independents who want to go the council route would be Joanna Donnelly and Nick Delahunty. We saw them both on TV3's Kieran Cudahy programme, Tonight programme this week. Reactions so far as a start to their campaigns?
Well, Nick Delahunty, he started his campaign, I think it was about 10 days ago or so, and quite a high profile, flashy campaign at a centre in Dawson Street in Dublin.
He's an independent who's taken quite a strong stand over the IPAS centres and did reasonably well, didn't he, in the general?
Yeah, he did reasonably well in the general election. He has kind of focused on IPAS centres and issues along those lines. I think his perspective is that he's trying to come across as the reasonable voice among that particular voting segment. Whether that's successful or not is an open question. But I think for now, he's certainly accessible to the media. He certainly wants to engage in discussions. Whether his message is going to get across or not is up for debate, of course.
And he'll be in Tralee on Monday. Mm-hmm. Joanna Donnelly's name is not on that list of people to be in Tralee on Monday. And by the way, Kerry County Council, the first out of the traps, there's 31. They're all having meetings over the next 2 weeks. So it's going to be frenetic. It's going to be very, very busy for those candidates seeking to go that route, because they'll have to be literally hightailing it around the country for the duration of those meetings.
I think when it came to Joanna, it was just a big surprise. And what seemed to be pretty clear from radio and television interviews was that there isn't an awful lot of depth in relation to why she's going for the job and what she wants to do. So it came as something a surprise. She herself said it was something she'd just been thinking of in recent days, and unless there's something substantial which she's able to pull together with the team, one would imagine that's just going to fade away.
Bob Geldof?
Yeah, yes. I don't know yet.
What we believe is that Bob Geldof is considering. And we know for a fact, because Fianna Fáil confirmed it, that he had been in touch with Micheál Martin, the Fianna Fáil leader, last weekend, and was told effectively that we've gone too far with Jim Gavin. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. We know that he's considering, evaluating, whether or not he wants to go the local authority route. And I think...
What's his position on a United Ireland?
But I think even though we don't know, but here's the thing. I think out of all of those who are going the independent route and heading to try and go to local authorities, he more than anyone else, because of the name he has, because of his experience, because of things like Live Aid, a successful businessman, a famous rock and roll musician, someone who did challenge the state in the 70s and 80s. He is the type of person who could rock up to a local authority.
The oldest candidate in the field at this stage, wouldn't he?
Who hasn't lived in Ireland for 50 years.
But are you saying that he doesn't know what's going on?
But that's something that would be...
I do think that he's someone who could... force local authority, but impress upon a local authority to say, listen, give us a chance.
I did enjoy quality if you walked in the door to your local county council meeting and in comes Bob Geldof and says, Guys, listen, I'll sing you two songs.
They'd all be looking for selfies
well.
Anyway, even if they weren't giving them.
They'd all be looking for selfies, but I did enjoy Micheál Martin saying on Saturday, just a few days ago, that he phoned Bob Geldof out of courtesy. That was just the day after Bertie Ahern had made it pretty clear that he hadn't received that courtesy as well. So you'd wonder, was Micheál trying to perhaps throw some salt into a certain wound?
Yes, you can always rely on Fianna Fáil, can't you, for the little bit of the deeds coming in. Mary Hannafin also making her feelings known. There's been talk of Declan Ganley, Gareth Sheridan, again, that council route, and somebody else. We've avoided talking about him up till now because I thought the idea, Paul, of Conor McGregor getting a nomination was kind of far-fetched. He's certainly been a big feature on social media in his determination to be President of Ireland. The latest post coming from outside government buildings, 1.4 million views. The last I saw of it, quoting the proclamation and finishing with amen. If Bob Geldof has star power that could impress the councils, how would you rate Conor McGregor's chances?
Well, I think when it comes to Conor McGregor, the pendulum swung left, in which he was beginning to say, yes, I'm interested. This is some months back. And then watching his posts, he seemed to have sort of withdrawn from the idea. So the effective thinking in political circles was that he was gone. And now suddenly he swung back left again, and he's urging people who follow him, and many people do, to go down to their local councillors and tell them that Conor should be allowed in. It's a strange political approach, because usually it would be the candidate themselves who would be telling the councillors, rather than the candidate's friends telling the councillors on what to do. So it's still a little bit up in the air, not quite sure what this means. But when it comes to garnering publicity, he's very effective, and the video that you were just talking about, it's all over social media and will be reported widely as well.
But he doesn't have, there's no proper approach there to getting a nomination in any route. I mean, he's not talking to councils, he's just urging people to talk to their councillors, to urge them to
which I suspect will get an awful lot of councillors around the country, an awful lot of pylons from people who happen to live in the United States.
Yeah,
if they're but real,
I mean,
anyway, but
Conor McGregor doesn't look to me like he's going to make the cut for the nominations.
So do we have anything else to say about the race for the Oras as September gets going?
Unless any of you three want to add your name to those considerable lists. I mean, you know, who knows? Who knows, Paul, for the Oras maybe?
Yeah, I mean,
I have enough to keep me going busy.
I suppose the thing is that it's just about to get real. I think we've been talking about it for months, and now we know that within 3 weeks' time, it'll be decided. And I think that's the point where you're going to have this short, sharp campaign of just 4 weeks, and there's going to be a plethora of interviews and television debates and everything. It's going to be really, really intense. And the thing to watch, I think, is that it's for that one moment. In a debate or in an interview, someone trips up and everything can fall away from
the Sean Gallagher moment in that Pat Kenny debate. And actually, there's one thing, because I've seen a couple of pieces about, you know, why are we all talking about the presidency? Does it really matter? There's no doubting the impact that the last three presidents have had. It's a really, really circumscribed role. You have to live between the lines. But actually, because I'm banging on about this because we're doing a programme about President Higgins at the moment. But when you look at what the president is able to do, people are very proud when the president gets the tone right, when they represent the nation well.
The feeling.
When they speak what's in their hearts. It's a very difficult path to walk, because you have to be very careful with your words. It's also about recognising who our community is, both in the trips the president makes to them and in the people who are brought to Oras and Uachtaráin, and the pleasure people get out of their contact there. So it's all about that knitting together. And like you were saying, Paul, you know, the father of the nation kind of during COVID there with the dogs and, you know, that symbolism of everybody kind of being isolated together. So the presidency, I think people care, voters care about this very much. I'm not sure they'll be swayed by all the analysis that we'll all be doing backwards and forwards very much. They're going to look at the candidates. They're going to make up their minds. And even if, you know, they've some reservations, they will be very clear about their least worst, the one they want representing them. And that matters to people, I think. That's rant over.
Right.
OK, we leave it there and we'll talk
good
to
on
you
on
soon.
You.
OK, goodbye.
Well done. That sounded like a speech from Hastings.